Well, that's what's going on here, basically. A couple other details. He talks about how he feels there's a conflict between magic and science. The bottom of 307. So as I say, I don't think we're getting new stuff here. We're getting reflections on what we've already done. Science or magic, and that continues on the first column of 308. And we have sort of conversion of terms: the magic, the serpent, and the rod. They're all the same. And so he talks about the serpent as the sum of all mysterious creative force. About the middle of the first column on 308.
Say that again, the sum.
The serpent is the sum of all mysterious creative force. Which is why I talked about magic as alchemy. It's magic, really, you could say, the inner creative force he has not yet conceptualized.
And he even makes a really good description of alchemy in his little poem over there.
Yes.
309.
Yes.
Too.
Yes, we'll get there.
Where did you say that was?
Right in the middle of 308, the first column. The essence of nature, hard and eternally inconsolable, yet the sum of all mysterious creative force. See where we are?
Okay.
Yeah. Because we're going to be dealing with magic now till the end of the book, because we have this chapter is the keep getting these names mixed up. This is three prophecies, but pretty soon we get a chapter on magician, gift of magic. So, see, he's turning toward, always remember, the mysterious creative force. Has no way to conceptualize, so he calls it magic. But I think it will help you bring it back to your knowledge of Jungian psychology. You could say the transcendent function. You could say the principle of individuation. You could say the healing power of synthesis, which operates outside of the control of the ego. The ego sets the thing up, but this thing just happens. I must say, it astounds me sometimes. You reach a cul-de-sac in the work with somebody, and then you think, oh my God, where are we going? Boom, the next dream comes, it's a resolution. Where did that come from? It's astounding. Magic, yeah, you have to say magic.
This tension that he's feeling
right
with this rod kind of fascinated me, and I'm not really sure what to think about that.
Well, I took it to mean the tension you have to bear if you are facing your conflict, and it's that very tension that constellates this mysterious creative force. That's how I took it. Or you might say it's the tension between the transcendent capacity of the psyche and the scientific mind. But I think it has to do with carrying conflict. I don't know if you remember in the Living Symbol, she used that phrase to provoke grace. So it's not that we disregard grace, it's this individuation process presupposes you have done certain things to elicit it. And those certain things are facing your conflict, which is full of tension.
And it's like lead, he says. And is that going to relate to lead in alchemy?
Yes.
Okay.
Because it's heavy, it's demoralizing.
The salt is iron, cold as death.
A he also calls it the gift of darkness over on 308, the first column, 2, 4, 6 lines down. The gifts of darkness are full of riddles. We don't understand what's going on. Now, in response to all those questions earlier, 2, 4 lines down in the second paragraph, how much future the depths carry. So that the depths, facing your inner depths, is at the same time being concerned with the future. So there he's beginning to see these aren't two separate activities, but the trick is the depths are the experience that comes when facing conflict. The tension of the future is unbearable. He's seeing, I should look at a picture. 129. Yeah. Isn't it amazing?
That is a very complex piece of painting. Mm-hmm. Don't you think, Carl?
Oh, absolutely. I was just marveling at it. And there's a, it took me a while to see this figure down here.
Here, Carl, you want to use the pointer?
Hands are raised like in prayer or supplication. Mm-hmm. Or,
oh, Carl, can you point it out with this?
That work.
Just push the little button.
Right there is his arm coming up, his head, the other arm, and then he's coming down here, and he's behind these houses, I think.
I think he's standing in a high tower. Look at the edges.
Oh, houses over here.
And this high tower is in the foreground, and the darkened city is in the background. And there's the moat down there on the bottom.
Yes.
He's standing in an inferno. I see that as
cool. Yes, it does glow. Mm-hmm. But if you look at carefully at the original image, you can see clearly that it's a tower, a medieval tower.
It's in some ways a really sophisticated painting. I mean, this man is an amazing painter. The color vibrations that he gets going in the in that central mandala. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the kind of stuff they were working out with off art, you know, and playing with those kind of color frequencies and so forth that sort of simulate the eye, and it's very transcendent. And he's kind of circling, wrapped himself around that amazing vision of life.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is very well done, the entwining of that star.
And thinking of the Tao and really supplicating himself to his own path, because the dragon mm-hmm. would be walking, the serpent would be walking that path, and then the star would, of course, be his fate, the image of his mm-hmm. fate.
And how it's all contained.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is it his destiny or fate? What's the difference?
Well, it's semantic. I use the word destiny to mean the pattern that you are given to live.
So that would be destiny.
I take, probably hear other people do it the other way around. I take fate to mean like if your parents were alcoholics, your fate may be to be an alcoholic. It's like your negative destiny, which you have to avoid. But that's just my vocabulary.
I think Miriam talks about that in the video.
Oh, does she?
I think so. Yeah. Similarly to what you said.
You know, the dragon's very eastern looking. That's definitely a nod to the Tao.
Mm-hmm.
And he calls the serpent eventually the way.
Exactly.
And if you'll notice, if you look carefully at the origins of this serpent, it comes out of the man's torso.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to this in the text, he says that that rod, that serpent, is in his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think this is an illustration
mm-hmm.
of it.
Because that's where he's experiencing the tension that's going on.
Or the middle way also.
Mm-hmm.
We just have this quote, the serpent is the sum of all the mysterious creative force.
Right.
This is certainly an illustration of that.
Also, the Tao is called the Shining Valley Serpent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Tao, magic, transcendent, I mean, all of these are facets of what he's realizing now belongs to the human psyche. I think that's, these pictures now are just achieving a vitality we haven't seen before.
Well, I think his skill in painting the star and the dragon is, it even surpasses the skill of the rest of the painting.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know if you would agree with that, Carl. It's as though something took hold of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And as he painted that part of the image, you know, he had a lot of help from those creative
mm-hmm.
forces that he wasn't ordinarily capable of
mm-hmm.
as an artist.
And the reproduction here in the central mandala, there's a good deal of blue going on in the southeastern and the northwestern quadrants. And it has a really powerful effect against the orangish red. It's just delicious. It's just really, really satisfying. And you can see some of it here.
Yeah, that's where the imagery falls down, showing blue and orange in the same.
Yeah. Well, we'll turn the lights on and go over.
Yeah.
It makes you want to achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you want to have the power and the energy represented by the snake dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Requisite to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And fierceness. There's plenty of love, you know, is testimonial to this psychology, or advertisement for it. That would be on the cover of his book.
Interesting how that star has multiple layers. Mm-hmm. It looks like one of the multiple dimensions on the bottom part. And the upper layers
are like cut off, or like sheared off, mm-hmm. and then the deeper layers.
Mm-hmm.
Finish off.
Yeah, sheared off on the
bottom.
The top. You mean the composition of the star? Yeah. No, I meant just that top. It seems like
up here.
The composition ends for the star. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, that top layer, the top layer there, it looks like the underneath and finish off.
Yeah, that gives the feeling of it bursting bigger than life, bursting forward.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in the bottom left, those houses, it almost looks like they're electrified and lit.
Mm-hmm.
On the roof line and mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah. Oh, but like they're glowing from mm-hmm. the stars' light?
Yeah.
if the points are touching.
Mm-hmm. My fantasy, that was the Chicago shoreline. You just felt like it.
Yeah.
That's right there. Uh-huh. Sure. And that's your Golden City. That is my Golden City.
Gold Coast?
Yeah. Whatever. But I like the, for me, and I'm not sure the, it was a, more a feeling than anything else, the serpent body, is, it felt like it was continuously shedding and growing new skin. The red patches felt like what he was shedding, and then underneath was the new growth.
There's this old mythic image of the magician coming up the top of his tower and summoning his powers.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is, as you say, I think the more I look at it, I think it is a power thing. He's there raising his arms like the magician, so he's starting to see himself as a magician with some of his powers.
You know, it almost looks like he's a conductor.
Mm-hmm. That's what conductors do.
Okay. Can we have the lights, please?
Maybe I want to take a look at this again.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
So how much future the depths carry, I mentioned. The tension of the future is unbearable. And that continues to, you will not bear going your way. You always want to have at least one foot on paths, not your own, to avoid the great solitude.
Where are you exactly?
I am about 3/4 of the way down, second column, 308. The paragraph beginning, oh, that all men. Mm-hmm. Go down 1, 2, 3, 4 lines.
What's second?
Well, funny you should ask.
My memory of that passage, and I don't have it for me now, but is that this is sort of a, what one does is sort of a, it's almost backsliding to always have one's foot on this.
Oh yeah,
on this way.
Let me read you his dream as a young man. He cites this dream in Ion, and he tells it in the third person, but it's his dream. He dreamt that he was walking in a wood. Gradually, this grew more and more lonely and wild, and finally he realized that he was in a primeval forest. The trees were so high and the foliage so thick that it was almost dark on the ground. All trace of a path had long since disappeared. So he's walking a totally new path in the dream, and he's trying to get the courage, I think, to pull that off.
To not keep a foot on a known path.
So all trace
need for security and comfort.
I just love that sentence. All trace of a path had long since disappeared. I mean, that's the dream of a pioneer. But driven on by a vague sense of expectation and curiosity, he pressed forward and soon came to a circular pool measuring 10 to 12 feet across. It was a spring, and the crystal clear water looked almost black in the dark shadows of the trees. In the middle of the pool, there stood a pearly organism about 18 inches in diameter that emitted a faint light. It was a jellyfish.
What page is that?
This is paragraph 208 in Ion, and Edinger talks about it on page 106 in his Ion lectures.
I thought in Memories he calls it a radiolarian.
He does. Then.
And that's not a jellyfish. That's a one-celled organism that's like a mandala. Or a, well, it's not necessarily one-celled.
It can't be one, well, because it was a, what he says in Ion, in Memories, it's 1 meter.
Yes, it could be a meter in the unconscious, and then in the ocean it's only microscopic, but...
Radiolarian.
Radiolarian. That's a microscopic creature, right, Clark?
Yeah, well, he tells it in two different places. He talks about it again in Memories, where he describes it. He describes the jellyfish, or whatever it is, more clearly, but he doesn't mention the path. But that's why I just wanted to show you the contrast between what he's struggling with here. I think he was in high school when he had this dream, because that's when he decided to study natural science. He took, at that time, he took the organism as indicative of his interest in natural science. It has other meanings, of course, but the point is how he's struggling here to walk the path that I would say would be his destiny. To do pioneer work that nobody had done before.
Where again is that?
In our text, you mean?
Yeah.
Look at the paragraph on the second column of 308. Oh, that all men, and go down four lines down. Mm-hmm. You always want to have at least 1 foot on paths not your own to avoid the great solitude, so that maternal comfort is always with you. That sentence is volume 5. Symbols of Transformation is about giving up comfort for adulthood, which is what the mother's son can't do. And I just, as a one-liner, I like the sentence, someone pulls you over onto their path where you stray from yourself and where it is easier for you to set yourself aside as if you were not yourself. Who should accomplish your deeds? Who should carry your virtues and your vices? I like that bit. Use one of your pens, Carol. Mm. He later said in a point, it's just as possible to miss our final guilt as it is our final happiness, as if both virtues and vices have to be lived. Okay, so again, just reflecting, giving terms, embroidering on the experience. Then, as Carol said, he talks about the way. So magic, the way, the snake, the rod, the creative forces, just trying to give words to what he's experienced. The nature of the way is magical.
What does he mean when he says magic is the working of men on men?
I was confused by that part.
I think it would help if you... for me, the word magic is problematic. Put in the word synchronicity. That when you are working on yourself and you have a synchronistic experience, it will often involve other people. So that there's an eros aspect to synchronicity. And I think that's what he's driving. Remember, we got to be kind of careful here because he is groping for explanations. He doesn't realize himself what he has experienced. I think that's why he turned to alchemy, because alchemy then gave a framework for all the things he's groping to express here.
How much earlier than his time was alchemy?
500 years.
Maybe more. I mean, the roots of alchemy go way back.
Back to Egypt, probably. Yeah, it flowered. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pre-scientific, quote unquote. It's the scientific revolution that banished it from.
Wasn't it called magical thinking?
Magical thinking, yeah. So that's over 309. And like you say, Carol, that famous alchemical dictum, as above, so below, we have here, the above is powerful, the below is powerful. So as far as I know, he didn't write that because he knew alchemy, but he was just articulating a sense of what this process involved, and that it had both a transcendental and earthly aspect. On the next quote, I haven't skipped any pictures, have I?
Yeah.
I skip one?
At the end of that.
Yeah, 131, mm-hmm. Yeah. The winds in between bind the cross. Well, the wind is the spirit. In between is what we have just seen come to birth. And the wind would be another image for this power that produces change from within the unconscious. The poles are united by the intermediate poles in between. Red hot ash envelops around the floor, and I think, though I try to stay away from footnotes, sometimes we have to. And the footnote refers to the magic circle of Asclepius. It's a little confusing because that footnote, God, I can barely see it. Is that 245?
Yeah, it's on the other page.
It's on the other page.
That confused me too. I went to the other footnote, which also seemed to refer to that page.
Yeah.
That made it extra confusing.
Well, just in case we're not confused enough. The editor refers to the magic circle in which ritual acts are performed, but I would take that back to Asclepius, where you walked inside a protected circle, you pray for a dream, and the idea was that Asclepius would come to you in a dream and tell you your cure. Night sinks blue and deep from above. Earth rises black from below. And
me like that dragon has transformed into that tree. Because the tree, the stylized bark of the tree resembles the scales of that dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a strange tree. What kind of tree is that?
It's like an abstraction of a tropical tree.
Mm-hmm.
Because that bark pattern is characteristic of some kind of palm, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just looking at the construction of the greenery, it looks like some kind of tropical tree.
To me, that energy coming off there reminds me of plasma.
Mm-hmm.
Of what? Plasma. You know, we see in scientific experiments where they create plasma, and plasma is actually a distinct phase of matter. And in fact, it's the most common form of matter, but it was the last one to be discovered. They didn't really realize it, and it's what plasma was. And
where is this plasma in life?
Well, flame is plasma. Lightning's plasma, nebulae are plasma, stars are plasma, and even the empty vastness of space is plasma.
Now, is that the same? Is that one?
No.
Okay.
That's a different kind of plasma. Plasma, it's separate from solids, liquids, and gases. It's a collection of charged particles that respond collectively to electromagnetic fields. And it was, when it was first discovered, it was called radiant matter. In other words, the, you know, the light of nature, you might say.
Well, but these charged particles might be molecules or atoms of known elements.
Well, yes, but I don't know that all elements are capable of being in that state. It is a state of matter, yes. It's not both liquid, the solid, or the gaseous state. But I don't know if all elements are capable of forming a plasma or not.
So could you say, Carol, or Gary, that plasma would be the fourth to the three of solid, liquid, and gas that would be known at that time?
That's a great way to think of it.
Well, a new world is coming into birth. I mean, I think that's the simplest thing to say.
Yeah, because I've never, I mean, I kind of studied science, not terribly seriously, because nursing care a little bit, but not so much, but I've never heard of a fourth element besides the song, or fourth way of elements.
Fourth state of matter.
Fourth state of matter, besides solids, liquids, and gas. So that would be very cutting edge science.
Yes. But, well, I guess it was discovered in 1879, so it was shortly after he was born, but he would have known about plasma
as a scientist,
I think, and he was involved with physics, so I think he would have known what plasma was.
But it would be pretty cutting edge, because even when I was in college taking some basic science courses,
I agree. I didn't get that many in my science.
I didn't either.
But it really speaks to that state of matter, really speaks symbolically to Jung's idea of the spirit and matter.
And there's a matrix in the image too of light coming out of that.
Right.
I don't really feel like I understand that mandala like center very well.
Well,
it's very peculiar.
It's the earth that's. Earth rises black from below.
Let's see. Where are we reading, Gary?
The second little passage on the top of 309. Night sinks blue and deep from above, earth rises black from below.
Well, I guess, I don't know.
I just took that to be the new world he's discovering.
Mm. I took it to be the tree, that black rising. But
well, he says the earth rises.
Yeah. I guess I take symbolically that
tree. Oh, the tree is earth?
Earth.
Well, it could be. I see your logic, yep.
Black earth around the tree, too.
Now that strip of yellow would have been bright gold in his initial painting. That would have really shone out. Mm-hmm. That little inner mandala has sort of a mechanical something look to it. Or maybe it's stylized runes, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, because they come up again pretty soon.
Mm-hmm, they do.
Yeah.
And some of his runes did have a kind of an appearance.
Yeah,
like that.
I can see what you're saying, that the tree is the earth he's referring to. I think it amounts to the same thing, that this is the new thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the earth is growing up around the unknown. Maybe you're not supposed to be able
to understand. He certainly doesn't understand it yet, I don't think.
More than likely, the blossom,
right? Yeah. Let's see. Plasma is, there's, in plasma, the particle is stripped of its charge, I think. No, it's charged. You're right, Carl. It's a charged particle. So, yeah, I'll bet it is. Because they are responding collectively to an electromagnetic field.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, flames are plasma. Just fire is plasma. Lightning is plasma. Nebulae are plasma. Stars are plasma. And the empty vastness of space.
That's harder to grasp.
That is, yeah. That is, what does that mean? Dark matter, maybe.
Apparently, you think it's lightning. For me, it's just electrical charge, arcing.
I guess it's more than that, according to this physics side.
Almost all electrical charges.
Well, probably all.
I don't know.
Sorry to say it, all sparks are spark plasma. I try not to say it, but I couldn't help. Well, I say we've reached a stopping point at image 131. I hate to rush through the last bit. It doesn't really add much, but some of it's quite poetic. So it'll give us a way to pick up and review. And then I think we're going to see what continues is this business of reflecting on what have I just experienced. And the way of the cross, what did I figure?
1, 2...
Why don't you read over to 314? Because you got the summer.
I don't. The whole page?
No, just stop before bracketed 2.
Okay.
I don't even get that far, but just in case there's a miracle.
Some magic occurs.
Some magic occurs, you never know. Well, hope you've enjoyed this as much as I have. Have a nice summer. And I'll see you back in September. You can sit around a munch a bit if you like. That's fine. No, it's, let me see, it's 40 meetings. It's 2 years and some months.
Okay.
Yeah, because I figure 18 meetings a year.
But I mean, how long have we been doing
it? I think 2 years and some months. I think we started like February or March, so we did those months, and then we had 2 years after that. So it'll be the longest thing we ever did.
Yeah. When did we start? Beginning of 2011 on this test? Is that what you were asking?
I think beginning of 2010.
I was asking when we started.
Yeah. So I'm still interested. So thanks for your work.
You know.
Thank you.